Israel's defense minister has said that if Hamas doesn't hand over more hostages, it will pay an increasingly heavy price. The warning from Israel Katz comes as the UN says it's cutting its international staff in Gaza because it can no longer guarantee their safety. The Gazan health authorities say at least 23 people have been killed there today. On Sunday, the Nasser hospital in Khan Yunis was bombed. Israel says it was a precise strike aimed at a senior Hamas leader. One other person was also killed. The Nasser Medical Complex is one of the last main hospitals in southern Gaza, and it treats people with severe burns and trauma injuries. Dr. Feroz Sidwa is an American trauma surgeon who's working there as a volunteer. I spoke to him a short time ago, and he began by explaining what it was like there today. And before we play the interview, I should let you know that parts of it are quite graphic and upsetting.
Ever since the bombing of the hospital on the 23rd, we've been getting a steady influx of casualties. We haven't had a true mass casualty event where hundreds of people came in at once, but it's just been steady, steady, steady. Like last night, I heard an explosion near the hospital last night around, I think it was 9 o'clock, 8:30 or 9. So I went down and asked my ER colleague, Tammy, if there was going to be injuries there. She said there probably are. So the first two casualties that came in were dead. They were both 4 or 5 year old boys. They were still breathing when they came to us, but they had devastating brain injuries, and we don't have a neurosurgeon here, so there was nothing that we could do. So we told their parents they just had to take them to the quiet area and stay with them while they died. And then the next patient that came in was I just saw her in the ward, a 10-year-old or actually an 11-year-old girl. Just ripped to shreds. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a child that injured who was still alive, to be honest. Just trying to spare the details, I guess, but she's very likely to have 3 of her 4 limbs cut off eventually. Just an absolutely devastating series of injuries. This is all from an Apache helicopter gunship just strafing their car for some reason. I don't know if it was collateral damage. I don't know if she was, I don't know if the man that was killed in the car with her was the intended target. Apparently it was her dad. So the number of casualties that we're getting is, even though now it's a steady drip instead of an overwhelming deluge, is going to overwhelm the hospital soon. I was just on the female surgical ward, and there's one patient admitted with appendicitis, and everyone else is an explosive injury. So no hospital can sustain this type of influx of severely injured trauma with mangled, especially with mangled extremities, and especially involving children, because kids just take so many resources to get them right. And it's just incredibly challenging. So the hospital, even though it's, even after the bombing, thankfully the bombing didn't actually affect the electrical system or the water or anything like that. It just destroyed the entire men's surgical ward and probably 40 or 50 beds. But it is making it's the steady influx of trauma. Complex, really, multidisciplinary, difficult, resource-intensive trauma, especially in children, combined with the fact that the hospital is under blockade, just like the rest of Gaza, and so we can't get supplies. And then combined with the fact that there just aren't enough surgeons here to deal with what's going on. So that's the situation.
Gosh, that's a lot. Can you talk to us about the impact of the lack of medical supplies? Because we know that aiding, including those supplies, has been blocked since the start of the month. What sort of impact is this having on your day-to-day work?
Yeah. We're going on 23 or 24 days now without anything having been allowed into the Gaza Strip, which is longer than even at the beginning of this craziness on October 7th. Right now, we can still do life-saving operations. We don't have any major limitations on our ability to do that right now. But in terms of reconstructive operations, we can't really do much. Actually, I have a little girl. A 13-year-old girl, she's 15, who had a bad liver injury, and she also had a pneumothorax, so her lungs popped and were leaking air. We put a chest tube on both sides and drained out that air, but we don't actually have the proper drainage system, which is just a piece of plastic. It's nothing complicated. We throw them away in the U.S. like they're nothing, but we don't have one here. So her chest tube is just going to a regular plastic bag because there's nothing else to put it to, and so the chest tube just isn't working at all. So we're actually going to remove her right chest tube before it should be, just so we can take the drainage system from that one and put it on the other chest tube so that her left lung can come up. These are completely ridiculous decisions to be making. There's no reason we shouldn't have a bottle that a chest tube can go to. But nevertheless, this hospital doesn't have, actually I'm on the fourth floor of the hospital right now. This is where we live, and right in front of me is the old warehouse for the hospital. It was the dialysis building, and it was burned and destroyed in March when the Israelis raided the hospital and destroyed a lot of it. And so this hospital can't even keep a strategic reserve of supplies, even if it was available. There's nowhere to put it, you know. So this is the situation we're facing, and it's a very if this rate of trauma continues and this rate of killing continues, the hospital will be out of life-saving supplies very soon. We're not there right now, but we're definitely headed there. Or, like, just to give another example, the pharmacy, the hospital isn't allowing anybody who gets elective surgery, you know, like a nerve repair from a previous injury or their gallbladder taken out, or, you know, the normal medical problems that people have, and none of them can get preoperative antibiotics, which they should. We, in the U.S., anywhere else, we would do that, but we can't now because they say we have to conserve the antibiotic supply. So it's a major problem.
Will you talk to us about Sunday? What happened?
So I was I had a patient on the male surgical ward. They divide wards here between men and women. So on the men's surgical ward, named Ibrahim, he was a 16-year-old boy who on the 18th his tent had been bombed, and his colon and rectum had been injured. So I had repaired those and then given him a colostomy. And actually, he would have gone home on the 24th, the day after the 23rd. And so I was actually on my way down to see him and change his bandages. Probably, I think it was like 8 o'clock at night. 8:30 at night, something like that. And actually, there's a doctor in the intensive care unit named Dr. Hadil. I have to walk past the ICU to get down there. Dr. Hadil said, "Hey, there's a patient bleeding here. Can you help me with him?" So I said, "Yeah." So I went in, looked at that guy for about 10 minutes. And we decided he needed to go to the operating room. So Dr. Hadil said she would set that up with the OR. And then I was about to go get on the stairs and go back down to the men's surgical ward when we heard the explosion. So then Ibrahim, the 16-year-old boy, was actually killed. So if Dr. Hadil hadn't pulled me into the ICU just to help me or just to ask for help, I would have been standing right next to this kid when he was blown up. And the Israelis directly bombed the hospital to kill a man who was here as a patient, and they accidentally killed a 16-year-old boy in the process, because they claimed that this guy was in Hamas. Well, okay. I mean, that doesn't mean you can bomb a hospital to kill him, but that's, I guess, just my opinion.
Just finally, you've worked in several countries around the world. Have you ever experienced anything like this?
No. It's unfortunate, but it takes about an hour to actually discuss what has been done to the Gaza Strip over the past 15 months. It takes so long to describe the violations of the norms and the laws of war that have happened here. It's specifically related to healthcare. I'm not talking about with, you know, other things. I would never, ever have imagined that I would fix injuries in a man who was blown up. Or a boy, I should say, who was blown up in a tent because his home had been destroyed. He had been displaced however many times, who knows. He had been starved. And then after fixing his injuries and he was ready to be discharged, he would be blown up in his hospital bed. That is, if somebody can tell me where else that has happened on this planet in the past 100 years, I'd love to know about it. I've worked in Ukraine, I've worked in Zimbabwe, I've worked in Haiti, I've worked in Burkina Faso. These are rough places, but nothing like that is happening there. It's just totally, this is crazy. You know, just to give you an example of the level of carnage that's going on here, I was a surgical resident during the Boston Marathon bombing. It was a terrorist attack in the United States. I think in 2014, if I remember the year right. And so I was just looking at the numbers just the other day. On March 18th, which was just one mass casualty event out of literally hundreds that this hospital has seen during this war, on that one day, Nasser Medical Complex, which has 450 beds and eight surgeons and eight general surgeons and three volunteer surgeons at the time. So this one hospital with 11 or 12 surgeons, and 450 beds, saw 125 casualties, half of whom were seriously injured children. In the Boston Marathon bombing, where every hospital in Boston felt completely overwhelmed, all six level one trauma centers, which have 4,000 beds between them and probably 200 surgeons, saw the same number of patients that we saw in that one night. There's just no comparison to anything else that's going on anywhere on the planet.
And that was Dr. Feroz Sidwa speaking to us a short time ago from Khan Yunis in southern Gaza.